Hey, guess what? It's time for VoiceOver Body Shop, and our guest this week is the one and only Fred Melamed. Fred, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Pleasure to see you both and everybody out there.
Yeah, we're going to have a great time talking to you about all sorts of cool stuff when it has to do with acting and voice acting and what you got to do. If you've got a question for Fred Melamed, you can put it in the Facebook chat room, and I know Jeff Holman is sitting in there anxiously awaiting with a quill and pen to write those down and pass those questions on to us so we can talk to ask those of Fred a little bit later on. And George, you all set to roll?
I'm ready. I got my daughter right here asking for a password, and I'm ready to go.
All right. It's time for VoiceOver Body Shop right now.
From the outer reaches, they came, bearing the knowledge of what it takes to properly record your voiceover audio. And together, from the center of the VO universe, they bring it to you now. George Whittem, the engineer to the VO stars, a Virginia Tech grad with the skills to build, set up, and maintain the professional VO studios of the biggest names in VO today. And you, Dan Leonard, the voiceover home studio master, a professional voice talent with the knowledge and experience to help you create a professional sounding home VO studio. And each week, they allow you into their world, bringing you talks with the biggest names in the voiceover world today, letting you ask your questions, and giving you the latest information to make the most of your voiceover business. Welcome to VoiceOver Body Shop.
VoiceOver Body Shop is brought to you by VoiceOverEssentials.com, home of Harlan Hogan signature products, Source Elements, remote studio connections for everyone, VoiceActorWebsites.com, where your VO website isn't a pain in the butt. VOHeroes.com, become a hero to your clients with award-winning voiceover training. JMC Demos, when quality matters. And VoiceOver Extra, your daily resource for VO success.
And now, live to drive from their super secret clubhouse and studio in Sherman Oaks, California, here are the guys.
Well, hello there. I'm Dan Leonard.
And I'm George Whittem.
And this is VoiceOver
Body Shop,
or VO
BS.
BS.
Phantom voice in there. Anyway, we're here to talk about the voiceover business, and we've got a great guest coming up in just a couple minutes. Fred Melamed will be joining us. And, you know, it's interesting when you get up in the morning here in Southern California and you put on the radio and they start talking about this brutal weather back east. And I turn to Mrs. Leonard. I'm like, do I have to go shovel the driveway? Oh, no, I don't.
It's just a fever dream, Dan.
Oh, no. I miss the Northeast not.
Mm-hmm.
I miss my friends. There's certain things I miss about it. But, you know, after almost 5.5 years here in Southern California, I'm...
Well, there's room for you. Come on out. Because, you know, like all these big CEOs are leaving. Like you could move into, say, Elon Musk's place.
Oh, yeah.
God, can you imagine? Didn't he move to Texas?
Yeah, something like that. Hey, look, we got a great guest tonight. Let's bring him on so we can present the important stuff that he's got to get. Now, here's a guy that's been on a lot of TV shows, a lot of great movies. Maybe you saw The Serious Man or In a World or some great Coen Brothers movies. You know, you keep popping up everywhere. Let's welcome Fred Melamed. Fred, how you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you. I'm delighted to see both Dan and George and everybody who's watching.
Yeah, I see you everywhere, you know, because we're sitting around binge watching everything. I mean, it got so bad we started watching, you know, Turkish soap operas, but it was that were not dubbed. So go figure that one. You were not in those, but you've been in almost everything else. We saw you in WandaVision early on the season. And are you going to be doing more appearances in that one? Or is that just
in WandaVision? I'm sworn to secrecy about almost everything to do with WandaVision. So I can't say much about it other than I hope people enjoy it. I'm happy to talk about it, but I'm not permitted to talk in depth about it, certain aspects of it, things that happen in the future.
Ah, Well, you have no idea what time anything is going on with that show anyway. So it's
well, there's a new episode every Friday. That show is
that's all we know.
Serially revealed.
Yeah, a lot of people are liking it. It's pretty good. And we were talking earlier this week that I finally watched A Serious Man, and you were going to tell me that, you know, you didn't understand the ending either. I mean, I'm like, what?
Well, I mean, it's what I can't say that I mean. It's a work of art, so I wouldn't presume to say that I exactly know. It does sort of parallel the Bible. You know, there's a story in the Bible of somebody kind of similar to the story of Larry in that movie. And I know what happens in the biblical story. But I think it's meant to confound you. I think it's meant to sort of make you go, that's what happened? You know, I think that was the intent of the Coen brothers.
Yeah, I think they achieved that. So how busy have you been during the pandemic? How are you? Have you been working? What have you been doing?
Well, I've been doing voice stuff only. I haven't done any on-camera stuff whatsoever. I'm at high risk for the various unpleasant or worse than unpleasant manifestations of COVID. So yeah. I can't do anything that exposes me to the risk of getting it. Other than the smallest possible risk. So I'm staying at home. I have been doing some work from home, some animated shows. Let's see, I have some things that I can mention to people. I have an animated show that some people may have heard of called The Harper House. I appear on that serially. I appear on several episodes of that. I also appear on F is for Family, going to start later this year. It's last season, really amusing, interesting show that I think many people know. Some of your previous guests and friends, mutual friends of ours, Debbie Derryberry, among others, appear on that show.
Yeah.
And then I have a bunch of stuff coming out that was shot before the pandemic. I have a movie called Marzipan, kind of interesting movie about an alcoholic, kind of dried up, woman who works for the CIA, who was given one really big last assignment, and I play her handler in that movie. That'll be out later this year. I have another movie coming out, probably not for a year or more, called Hug Chicken Penny, which is a sort of Dickensian movie with a guy that I've collaborated with a bunch of times called S. Craig Zahler, wonderful, interesting writer-director. Another film I have that was a big hit at Sundance called Together, Together, which will be probably either on cable or a streamer, I would imagine, by this summer. Really sort of charming, interesting movie in which I play Ed Helms's dad. And in that movie, Ed Helms plays a guy who is single and wants to adopt a child and then decides he wants to do it via surrogacy. So he finds a woman to be a surrogate with whom he doesn't really have any relationship at all. And it's about what happens between them. Also very sort of interesting movie. Another one I have coming out, also a big hit at Toronto, called Shiva Baby, which is about a young woman who supplements her income while she's a student by having a sugar daddy who pays her for sexual encounters. And then she happens to be Jewish, and she's invited to go to a shiva, which is a Jewish funeral service, with her family through somebody that she doesn't know very well, but they're constantly going to these shivas. And there she sees her sugar daddy, this guy who happens to have been his family, good friends with the family of the person who passed away. And they find out that their families know each other, and it becomes extremely excruciating for this poor girl.
I'm sure. Yeah. Wow. Well, you were very busy then. And no wonder I'm seeing you just about everywhere.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of stuff also just still on that I've done in the last year and a half. Superstore, which is a CBS series, Medical Police, which is on Netflix. The Morning Show, which is on Apple TV. Another movie that I have coming out, a kind of Jewish exorcist, a Jewish horror film called The Vigil. Just won a very big, also a very big award. So I have plenty of stuff that's in the rotation. I have another film on HBO now called Lying and Stealing, in which I play a really villainous, unusually villainous character with no comic apologetic posture, just a pure downright nasty villain, which is a lot of fun for me to play. So that's a movie I think people might enjoy.
Great. Well, now I got all this stuff I gotta go check out when it happens. So you've been acting for a long time. I mean you were, as is true with a lot of great actors, you went to a really good school. You're a Yale graduate?
Yale Drama School, which is a graduate school.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, all the great actors all have gone to these really good schools.
And, I disagree.
Well, I'm sure there's some really good actors who went to some really crappy schools, but certainly ones that go to the good schools tend to be, you see that in their resume. But we'll take it a step beyond that, because trying to be good at something is, you know, everybody wants to be the best or the greatest or whatever. When you try to get into acting, is that really the attitude you should have? And what does it really take to move you in that direction?
Well, that, in my view, is an excellent question.
Well, thank you.
And an important question. And in my view, the answer to that question is yes, it is worth it to try and be great at something, at anything, in fact. You know, I have a somewhat different take on voice acting than probably many other people that people talk to, especially people that are just trying to get into it. Because I think people very often get lost asking questions that are not really the most vital questions. They want to know answers to things like, should I get the Rode mic that's $250, or is it worth it to spend $1,000 to get the AKG
what's
mic?
What's the best microphone for voiceover? George and I.
What's the best microphone for voiceover that won't take out a second mortgage? Or how can I get an agent that's a really good agent to represent me? Is it worth it to get a good agent? Should I have more than one agent? Should I go on P2P sites? What about my website? Who should I have design my website? All these questions, which are of very, very minor importance. What really matters is, do I want to be good at this? And if so, how do I get good at it? How do I get good at this? And what is good at this? You know, to me, the idea of being a working voiceover actor, a working actor, is too modest by far a goal. I wouldn't want to be a working dentist, teacher, bricklayer. I'd want to be great at any one of those things, because otherwise, why do it? To make a living? I guarantee you. I mean, I think people get the idea that, you know, well, it's great, I'll be a voice actor, I won't have a boss, I can wear pajamas, all these stuff. It's much too much work if that's the goal, just be able to make a living, a modest living, and not have to have a boss. I'd choose something that was much easier. If you're really successful at it, and if you're really good at it, the rewards are great. They're great. I mean, I've been extremely fortunate in that I've been doing it for a long time. And also, I came to prominence in it when it was a much smaller coterie of people that were doing it than are doing it today. And the work was more concentrated, and it was all union work. And because of that, I don't have to worry about working. I can take a job if I want to, and not, I don't have to work anymore as long as I live. That's extreme. That's the definition of extremely lucky, extremely fortunate.
Yeah.
But my point in saying that is, I also wanted to be good at it. So how do you do that? Well, I think the answer to that, and by the way, my perspective also may be different, because I'm one of the relatively few people that will come on this show that doesn't have anything whatsoever to sell. I don't teach anything.
The joy of this show is shameless promotion.
I don't teach. I don't give lessons. I don't make tapes. I don't coach anybody. I don't have round robins. I don't do any of that stuff. So I value education and I value study, but it's also my opinion that this enormous cottage industry that exists, this side industry of training people and making tapes and all that kind of stuff, which has grown larger than the voiceover business itself, is is in many instances not servicing the people that it claims to service properly. So I don't have any of that, you know, as an influence in my ideas about it. So, okay, you want to be good at voiceovers. What does good mean? What does good actually mean? Well, you could use an external measure and say good means people are hiring me. That certainly seems like one reasonable measure. But how do you become good by your own lights, by your own standards, to your own ear? Well, how would you get good at anything else? How would you get good at playing the piano or learning, I don't know, Spanish or being a writer or almost anything that's a skill that's also a talent? I mean, there's both things involved. Well, the first thing I would do is I would listen to people that I thought were really good. I would really, and if you don't know who's really good, then that's where to start. Listen to a lot of different people, tapes, reels, even people on TV and, you know, elsewhere, movies, wherever you listen, and think who really moves you. I mean, after all, what's good is what compels you, right? If a voice somehow makes you listen to it, we live in a wash in a sea of information, as everybody knows. There's constantly voices, advertising, programs trying to get our attention. Certain people get our attention, but they don't get it by saying, hey, look at me. Or if they do, our attention doesn't last long. So there has to be something about what that person, you know, is it because they could do things clearly, understandably? Is it because they can do things? I mean, that seems like a very, very common ability to be able to do things clearly, understandably. You have to be able to do things in a way that cuts through the wash of stuff that we are bathed in and actually makes an impression. You go, the meats. I want to get one of those Arby's. Yeah, that sounds good. Or whatever it is. It
usually works for me, yeah.
Yeah. I don't even like Arby's, but I noticed Ving Rhames on that ad, right? So at some level, whatever you do has to affect the person listening to it at some visceral level. That's what it has to do. It has to make him associate what you're doing, if it's advertising, with something that he wants to possess, or if it's something that's being acted, with a feeling that you're trying to impart to a scene or to a character. So that's I think the answer is, to the question that you asked, is it's worth it to try and actually be great at something. And it's important to, I don't think that it's not important to make decisions about, you know, how does my website look or, you know, that kind of stuff. But that's about that, all that stuff together is maybe 8 or 9%. And the other 91% people don't worry about, and that's where they should be worried.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with that. I know when I'm talking to people, when I'm, you know, when I'm working with clients and helping them with their home studios and stuff, and it's like, you know, you want to be better than everybody else, be better than them, you know, in what your craft is. You know, it's like, well, exactly what you were saying, you know, should I get a better website? Oh, I got to get this mic. I've got to get this. Look, it doesn't really matter so much. You know, technologically, I mean, that's what George and I do. I mean, we talk with people all the time about here's how it's supposed to sound. But in the long run, you know, how do you stand out amongst all these other people, this huge tsunami of people coming into voiceover and into acting? And since acting sort of shut down, everybody, all them coming into voiceover, how is it that, you know, how do you stand out? You just got to be better. So, if you're just joining us, by the way, our guest is Fred Melamed, and we're talking about what it really takes to be successful. If you have a question for Fred about, you know, his career or what he's talking about really what you need to do to improve your acting and voice acting chops, put it in the Facebook chat room. And I know Jeff Holman is in there furiously writing these things down, and we'll get to those in just a little bit. So what do you do as an accomplished actor? How do you keep yourself, how do you keep acting fit? I mean, do you still take classes? Are you still working with coaches, that sort of thing?
No, I do not.
Okay. All right.
I do not.
You're working a lot, so that helps.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. When it comes to voice acting, I think there's great value in practicing, and there's value in practicing in front of people or having, you know, listening to people, but also listening to yourself. I think as you get better at voice acting, you know, when you first start listening to yourself, there's this kind of shock thing that happens. You go, Jesus, I sound like that. And as you do it more and more, the kind of difference between what you hear in your head and what the microphone actually hears lessens. That gap is made up somewhere in your brain, in your consciousness.
Yeah.
So you have that issue. Then you have another issue, which is how does what you're doing fit into the overall thing? You know, how does it cut into whatever it's being used for, whatever way it's being used? Then you have to listen to that. Listen to it in the context in which it's intended. So I think it's worth it to really practice and listen to yourself. Now, what I do is I think of things subtextually. So people who are not familiar with acting expressions may not know the expression subtext. In modern acting theory, and by modern, I mean like 120 years old, there's a concept about acting, which is that there's a text, which is the words that we say that the playwright or the copywriter or whoever it is has written for us. And then there's whatever is beneath the words. Now, there's a character. There's always a character. The character if you see a film, the character is very obvious that it's not, that it's somebody different than the actor. Oh, sometimes it's very obvious, not always. Sometimes it's very obvious. Other times it's not. The way I think of a character is that a character is always me. It's always me, but it's me wearing a coat. And the coat can be extremely different from me. In other words, the coat may consist of an English accent. It may be a person whose orientation towards women is entirely different than mine, whose orientation towards work is entirely different than mine, who has to scrounge money to come up with enough for dinner. So that's all the coat. And the coat can make me, can be extremely different, as I say, and it can be almost anybody. But it's me underneath, because I must react realistically to whatever the situation is that I am faced with, whatever I'm presented with. Now, sometimes it's a one-way conversation because I have copy to perform, and that's all. I'm not conversing with anybody in the sense that we normally think of it. But still, I think of myself as having a message to impart to the listener. I'll give you an example. There was a commercial on TV a while ago for an ice cream, Dove Bars. You know those Dove Bars ice cream?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Very, very, very high butterfat, delicious, rich.
Now ice cream. I want one. Thank you very much. I don't need
anymore. But very nice ice creams. So the whole commercial was they showed this bar of ice cream getting somebody holding it out, and it was getting chocolate, molten, melting, delicious looking, rich chocolate kind of dribbling all over this ice cream bar. And that was the whole visual. And the voiceover, which was Kathleen Turner, you know, Kathleen Turner, the actress.
Oh, now I remember this commercial. Yeah.
Yeah, this is years ago. But it stuck out in my mind. And I can't remember what the copy was. It was very simple copy. Something about Dove Bars. And, you know, the point was, when you watch this, you knew that whatever else was going on in your life, however else your marriage was failing or you didn't have money to pay your mortgage, the 5 minutes or 2 minutes, if you're me, that would take you to eat a Dove Bar, for that amount of time, all would be right with the world. In other words, the experience of this Dove Bar was Calgon Take Me Away, was profound enough, deep enough, that all the other things in life that are semi-satisfying, not quite living up to your expectations, don't matter. When you saw this commercial and heard Kathleen Turner do this voiceover, that's what the message was. So that's an example of subtext, right? Now, sometimes subtexts are very obvious, and they use certain things to associate clearly. For example, car commercials, right? High-end car commercials. They use things like luxury, sensual pleasure, often kind of sexy suggestions that, you know, if you have this car, a car is a reflection of who you are. That's the sort of basic concept in car advertising. You don't want to drive a Nova. They don't make Novas anymore, but whatever today's Yugo is or Nova is, because that's you you're driving around, right? So if you're, you know, I don't know, if you're a Porsche kind of a guy, or if you're I don't know how you can see yourself any one of a number of ways. Maybe a Porsche, you see yourself more as a cool looking family van, a Tacoma.
Yeah.
But the idea is that car is a representation of you in the automotive world. So that's the way we're going to sell you the car. You know, that this is an extension of you. So you deserve this. That's a subtextual message, right? So if I'm reading, or another message is, let's say I have a Tesla, right? So Teslas are cool. They're cool because they are genuinely a new technology, which is a great technology. And they're also a really good, cool car to drive, fun car to drive. Elon Musk had a very, very clever, smart idea, which was to introduce not the Model T first, not the three that everybody can afford. He introduced the super expensive one first, that's very luxurious, that's built to last forever, and that when people saw them on the street, they go, yeah, that's a car I want.
I want one of those.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So he created with that car this this image. So when I approach voiceover, it's with a subtextual message. Now, it can be anything, and it cannot relate to the text at all. There are some instances, like, for example, see the USA in your Chevrolet. Nobody's old enough to remember what that means, but that used to be the tagline for Chevrolet automobiles. I'm trying to think of something that's a really memorable modern tag. We've gotten so far away from things that are memorable. Well, yeah. Arby's, We Have the Meats, for example, one we mentioned a short while ago. So what is the subtext that Ving Rhames, the great Ving Rhames, that wonderful actor who is the guy who voices that commercial, those commercials? Well, he certainly grabs our attention. But if I were doing that commercial, what would I use as a subtext? Well, I'm just guessing. I'm just trying to come up with something. I think maybe something like, this is a meal that you're going to have that you will be thinking about next week and next week and next week. And when you come to work, you're going to be thinking about lunch all day. It doesn't say that anywhere in the text. I'm just thinking that. Mm-hmm. And with the words, the few words that I have to say, which are Arby's, We Have the Meats, I'm going to be saying in my mind and trying to get you to feel, it doesn't matter if you get to work at 7:30, you're still going to be thinking all day about the time you could open this Arby's at 12:30 when you have your lunch. That's a subtext. Huh. It might work. It might not. You can always try a different one.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I've watched enough Super Bowl commercials. You're like, I don't think they nailed that one quite the way they should have, but. And then sometimes they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once again, we're talking with Fred Melamed about voice acting and subtext and those sorts of things. Again, if you've got a question, throw it in the chat room. We're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll be back with your questions and find out what Fred uses in his studio right after these messages.
Well, hello there. I bet you weren't expecting to hear some big-voiced announcer guy on your new orientation training for Snapchat, were you?
Stick around. You don't want to miss this. Power 103.9.
At Target, we want you to come as you are. Be comfortable. Okay, maybe not bathrobe comfortable.
Pants for the customer in aisle four, please.
Nuevo México necesita un cambio. La representante Michelle Lujan Grisham ha luchado por nuestro estado en la Cámara de Representantes.
Watch anywhere, anytime, on an unlimited number of devices. Sign in with your Netflix account to watch instantly at Netflix.com.
The ice cream maker is a big risk that can have huge rewards. Until you forget to turn it on.
Well, that's it, guys. Time is up.
Hey, it's JMC. Thanks for watching the VoiceOver Body Shop. If you're demo ready or looking to get there, check out jmcdemos.com and see a sample of our work. Now let's get back to Dan and George and this week's Tech Wisdom.
Hey there, it's David H. Lawrence, the 17th with VO Heroes, and you may be watching VoiceOver Body Shop, VOBS, because you're interested in becoming a voice talent, and you looked around the internet, you found that this was a great place to come, and you're absolutely right. But you don't have any of the knowledge yet as to how to get started. And I'd like to help you with that. I've got a free course online. You can take it anytime you want. It's called Getting Started in VoiceOver. And it walks you through the equipment you need, the business side of things, the actual categories of VoiceOver work that you'll likely be pursuing, and also the mindset that you need to have when you're getting started and moving into being successful at doing voiceover for a career. So if you're an actor or you're not an actor, you want a side grade from another business, you want to learn about voiceover, go to voheroes.com/start. That's voheroes.com/start for the VO Heroes Getting Started in VoiceOver class. And I'll see you there.
So I was talking to Harlan Hogan this morning. He described Chicago as having permafrost with more snow on the way. But something warmed his heart. A letter from a satisfied VoiceOver Essentials customer. And here's what he said. Hi, Harlan. Getting started in the VoiceOver business and want a big value for your dollar? Look no further than Harlan's Portabooth Pro and the VO1A mic. These got me started and have proven valuable in producing over 50 titles on Audible. Great results for a great price right out of the box. Douglas Burke, the agile narrator. So if you do audiobooks, clearly these two products from VoiceOverEssentials.com can help you get it done. Go on over to VoiceOverEssentials.com to see all the great VoiceOver recording equipment and accessories you'll ever need. That's VoiceOverEssentials.com, the home of Harlan Hogan's signature series products like the VO1A mic and the Portabooth Pro and Plus. Thanks, Harlan.
Hi, this is Bill Farmer, and you are watching VoiceOver Body Shop. It's great.
And we're back with Fred Melamed. We're talking about voice acting and really what it takes. Let me ask you. Now, I can see you've got a microphone in front of you.
And I do.
What do you have in your home studio?
Well, I have two microphones that I alternate back and forth with. This is a Neumann U87i microphone. I'll tell you the reason I have this microphone. When I started, first of all, I was the second person that I knew of all the people that I knew in the voiceover business to have a home studio. I built my home studio in 1992.
Whoa.
So what is that? 29 years ago?
Yeah, almost. We'll call it 30 years ago.
Yeah. Thereabouts.
So, and as the technology changed, of course, I had, and when I built my home studio, I didn't live in California then. I lived in New York City. And the only way to go live live recording to hook up with another studio, which was now very old technology called Switch 56, which was before ISDN.
Yeah.
A very, by our standards, primitive system, but it worked, it worked fine. But it wasn't made for consumer use. It was made for recording studios, and it was expensive and big and hot, and it had to have fans in it and stuff like that. So anyway, what I did, I lived in an apartment in New York, and I had a big walk-in closet, quite a good roomy walk-in closet. So I just took that walk-in closet and I put up Sonics all over it and I carpeted it and stuff like that. And then I had a thing custom built for my computer and my microphone and a mic stand and that sort of thing. Now, to give you an idea of how long ago this was, I required for my recording a 1.5 gigabyte hard drive that was rack mounted.
Oh my
that
God.
1.5, which was the largest one that you could buy commercially at the time.
Yeah.
It cost $12,000.
Whoa.
$12,000 for a 1.5. You can go to Staples now and get something that's 10 times that big, that's the size of your finger, and it's in the 89-cent bin. No kidding. Seriously. Yeah, exactly. Right. So this is all just to show, you know, how radically things have changed. But I've had this mic, this Neumann U87, since then.
Wow. And the reason that I have this mic for another 30 years.
I hope so. I hope I'm still around when this mic is still. Yeah. The reason that I got this mic was because at the time I had to match all the mics in the New York studios. That was the idea. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't because this mic is, I mean, it happens to be a very, very good mic, in my opinion. But the real reason was because I didn't want it to sound like I was different than any other studios that I was recording in. So at the time, this was the ubiquitous microphone for New York studios for voice recording. At the same time, interestingly, here on the West Coast, California, this mic was not so much the mic of choice. It had become, because of, I've heard this story. I think it's true. I don't know if it's entirely true. Largely because of Ernie Anderson.
Oh, the 416.
That's the legend, yes.
Yes. Another mic, which is a highly directional. This mic is a cardioid shape. Well, it has a capsule you can change on it. You can change how you want it, but I usually use it in the cardioid shape. This is all boring, all this shit. I don't know. I'm just
talking. That's what our show's
about. We talk about this all the time. Yeah,
okay. So there's another mic called a 414 that is much more directional. And for my kind of voice, I have a kind of a deep voice. And in my view, I actually sound better on that mic than I think I do on this mic sometimes. Right. This mic has a lot of low end on it, and I think I need a little bit more emphasis on sharp end. Of course, this can be done without microphones. It can be done, you know, with various kinds of equalization.
Right.
But in terms of just raw sound, I kind of like the way I sound less. I think I like the way I sound better on the 414 than I do on this mic.
Yeah, you're talking about the AKG 414 or the shotgun mic?
Oh, the 414. Yeah, 414.
No, what did I say? 44. Yeah, I'm talking about the shotgun mic.
The 416. Right.
416. I'm sorry, I said 414.
No, there's also a 414. That's why.
Yeah, that's an AKG shaped like sort of like a pyramid shaped mic.
Yeah, exactly.
I meant the 416. I'm sorry.
Yes, right.
I think on that shotgun 416 mic, I sound a little better. Mm-hmm. That was meant originally for doing film recording, and it's a long mic, if you've seen one, with a small capsule at the end of it, highly directional. So if you use that, you have to get used to really not moving much. But I think I sound better on that, and certain people do. The rumor is, or I don't know, the legend, and George says maybe it's true, I don't know. The legend is that the reason that mic became so ubiquitous in California was because this very well-known voiceover artist of, I guess, the 70s?
Yeah,
mid-70s. ABC. For ABC, he was the voice of ABC, which had Love Boat and what else? I don't remember all those years ago. Yeah. A guy called Ernie Anderson, the father of Paul Thomas Anderson, the notable, very notable, great director, who became paranoid or uncomfortable about people talking about him while he was in the booth. So he insisted on sitting, this is the legend, insisted on sitting with the producer in the part of the studio where the producer sits, talking into this extremely directional mic. Now, that's what people say the truth is. I don't know if it's really true or not. Of course, also, do you know the answer?
He wanted to be in there, but probably also it's just a lonely gig. I think because in those days, you know, all that announcing was truly live.
Yeah.
And so you were in that box for hours. And, you know, so you can look at it a couple different ways. You know, there's the when people talking about him behind his back.
Yeah.
And there's also
had a bit of a reputation anyway.
He didn't want to be alone. But whatever the case, the 416 was the only mic that could reject all the background noise from all the machinery in that.
And it does have a different sound. It's a little more compressed sounding. Mm-hmm. It's a little more high-endy, I think, you know.
It's the sales mic.
Yeah.
It's for selling stuff.
Yeah. By the way, when I first became friends with Don LaFontaine, now I don't know how many listeners know who Don LaFontaine was. I guess
a lot, a
good number of them know. So when I first got to be friends with Don LaFontaine, he used to drive around from studio to studio in a white stretch limo with said D La F on it, you know, on the door. And this is before cell phones, but there was a thing called a ship to shore phone, which was a radio phone before cell phones. And they were very expensive and they didn't work that great. But he had one in his limo. And what he used to do was when fax machines first came into being, he put a fax machine in his car and hooked it up to his ship to shore radio so that he could be faxed the scripts so that by the time he would get to wherever the studio, and you had to schlep all over in those days between the different studios. So he spent half the day sitting in the car going from one studio to another. So rather than wasting the time just sitting there, you know, in the car, in the traffic, he would get advanced copies of the scripts faxed to him so that he would have know what they said and I guess be up on them and practice them. So when he got into the studio, he could just sit down, do them, run through them and leave and go to the next place. So that was...
We've heard these stories many times. And I know George... Amazing. Knew him personally and stuff. We got a lot of questions from our audience here. You ready to tackle some of these?
Absolutely.
All right. Go for it, George. Top one there from Jeff.
Well, first one on the top is from Jeff Ganius. I am hoping that's the right way to say that name. What are your top two or maybe even three acting book recommendations? Do you have any that pop off the top of your head that you like?
Yes, sure. I'd say my number one favorite, is a book called Respect for Acting by Uta Hagen. That's a book that's not difficult to understand. It explains things in a kind of a easy way. That would be my number one choice. The second one is a kind of just very old fashioned, but very good book called An Actor Prepares, by Konstantin Stanislavski, the famous acting theoretician. And the third one, which really had a big effect on me personally, is actually anything by a guy called Michael Chekhov, who had an interesting view of acting where he said every character has what he called an essential gesture, which is a kind of a metaphoric way of looking at a character. In other words, to give you an example, for the people that are familiar with the movie A Serious Man, I play a character in that, a kind of an odd character who's a villain, but his style of villainy is strange and unctuous, where he kind of makes people relax. And he has this very cool way of talking where he kind of calms everybody down. And my idea with this character was that he was a massager. This Cy Abelman character, he would massage people either with his voice or with his way of handling them. So everything he does is essentially a massage. So this is this kind of Michael Chekhov idea of an essential gesture for every character.
Yeah.
Great. Those are my top picks.
Yeah. Matt Zacko asks, do you think being an on-camera actor makes you a better voice actor? And what do you like about each craft the most?
Well, you know, they're very different, although they use some of the same things. I do think that being good as an on-camera actor can improve your voice acting and vice versa. I think learning either thing can help the other, but they're so different because in voice acting, you have no visual and therefore you have to put everything into your voice, as I think of it, as I look at it. I mean, you're always trying to communicate something with your voice. Whereas in on-camera acting, I almost never think about my voice at all. I let it do what it does, but it's always in the service of the character, as I think of it. So I never think of doing anything specific with my voice other than trying to impart what the character is actually experiencing. I think anything that narrows your focus improves your acting, both your voice acting. It's a strange thing. You narrowing your focus widens your mind. It's one of those strange paradoxes. Concentration is a big deal in acting. You have to be able to concentrate, you know. And when you're acting on camera, there's people holding lights near you and things go wrong and you have to remember places to stand and there's all these technical things. But in a sense, you have to kind of take that all into your consciousness and yet make it very, very narrow your consciousness as to what you're doing. So all these peripheral things don't distract you. It's a concentration game. And I think that also applies to voice acting, but I think you have to, you know, you're going to constantly get direction. Like, you know, that was great. It was 0.7 seconds. We want it to be 0.6 seconds, but have fun with it. or things like that, where you have technical things to observe. And yet your mind can't be too caught in the technical because you still have to make your point as an actor. Meaning is first. Your meaning is first. So you have to kind of balance both things, both the technical aspects and also the human side of it. That's the skill part of it. It's being able to balance those things and not get thrown off when they say to you, well, we need it 0.6 seconds faster and not have it sound. We need 0.6 seconds faster, but we want it to sound slower.
Yeah, I've gotten that one.
Everybody's gotten that one. Everybody's gotten it. So, you know, you have to sort of be able to still keep your thought pure and let in all these things, but keep your mind on your goal, so to speak. Okay. On the other half of that question was, what do I like better? Or,
well, what do you like most about each?
Well, what I love about acting in general, and I think especially about on-camera acting, is that it's so consuming to me that I can't think about anything else. I like it for the same reason that I like gambling. It takes my entire consciousness to do it, which is an experience that I really enjoy. And there's an element of uncertainty about it. There's always a leap involved. I never know if it's going to work. I have a suspicion. I hope it's going to work. And I think to myself, well, I know this could work and this could work and this could work, but I never really know. There's always an element of leap in it. And what comes back, you know, we'll see. It's funny. You read a script. Sometimes you read a script and you think, well, this is really good. And look at all these great people are in it. All these other actors that I know, and they're great. And this should be great. And then you do it. And then something about it chemically does not gel the way that you wanted. And vice versa, you can have other things where you think, gee, this doesn't augur well. And then you get on there and you do it, and somehow something catches something, you know, you get lightning in a bottle, to use a corny expression. Mm-hmm. Something happens. There's a chemical element to it that you can't really predict. So I love that about it, the fact that there's always an element of chance in it, and you have to really focus your mind on it. Yeah. Voice acting is interesting because of its limitations. And I also like about voice acting that I'm a person who grew up never liking the way that I looked. I always thought I was not particularly prepossessing looking. So I felt much freer in front of a microphone where I could be different things than saddled with the way I look, which, you know, I can play different things, but I'm not likely to play certain things. You know, whereas in the voice world, my range is much greater.
This question came up because somebody actually Jeff Holman, our very own, really wanted to know, because he saw your resume in IMDb and he saw that you were playing these kind of older authority characters like judges. And he said that seemed to be where on IMDb, where your career seemed to start. So he was wondering, like, have you looked like this since you were in college? Did you fit those roles?
Exactly. I've had a strange career. And I'll tell you, I'll give you the short version of it. You know, I went to Yale Drama School, as Dan said, with the intention of becoming a so-called serious actor. And I started out, right after drama school, I got a job at a theater out in Minnesota called the Guthrie Theater for a year. And then I got a job on Broadway on Amadeus, on Broadway and on a tour of Amadeus, which was a big Tony-winning show of the 80s. And during that performance of Amadeus, during that time of doing Amadeus, which I was in for 16 months, I developed this unbelievably bad, crippling stage fright. Absolutely horrible, crippling. And this, I'd already been an actor for a while. And it became so bad that I thought, Jesus, I made this horrible mistake. I don't like this. I really don't like doing an 8-show week. And it became, I thought I was, you know, I thought, what am I going to do? Like, I, you know, here I said to people, I want to be an actor. And people said, oh, it's very hard. You shouldn't do it. And I said, well, I'll show you. And now I got this Broadway gig and I totally miserable. I don't like it. And it's a great play. And it's a good, you know, it's a good opportunity. I have a lot of friends who would be thrilled to have a Broadway gig, but I don't like it at all. So when this run was over, I felt kind of bad and defeated. And, you know, I thought, Jesus, this is bad. And I happened to have an agent, Harry Abrams, Abrams Artists, which has since become A3 Artists, but in the time it was Harry Abrams. And he had a lot of very big voiceover clients. And I knew about the voiceover world because my dad was a television producer, and he had been good friends with a very famous announcer back in the day, a guy called Kenneth Roberts, who was the father of Tony Roberts, the actor, Tony Roberts. Anyway, I knew about, as we used to call it, voiceover work and, you know, being an announcer in those days. And I said to Harry, listen, you know, I'd really like to try doing voiceovers. He said, well, it's a tough market to crack, and they don't really want people with sonorous, nice voices. They want people with voices that cut through. I said, well, just give me a chance. So he did. And this was 1984 or 1985. Right out of the box, I got some really nice big accounts. I got Mercedes-Benz. I got MCI, which is a phone company that people don't remember anymore.
I remember MCI.
I got Conoco, which is an oil company. So I had some very big accounts. So at a young age, I was still a young guy, and I was not married. I didn't have any, you know, big responsibilities. So as a young guy, I started to catch on in the voiceover world, and I kind of got spoiled. I didn't want to drag my raw meat out into the cold rain and subject myself to all the rejection of being, you know, a regular actor again, when I was a kind of a star in the voiceover world, and making, you know, a lot of money and all that, especially for a guy with no family and didn't have to worry about any of that stuff. So I really liked it. And I also got very, very fat. I weighed 400 pounds. I ate constantly. And yeah, so it was not an entirely healthy period, but it went on for about 20 years where that's all I did was voice acting. And occasionally there were some casting directors who liked me. Woody Allen's casting director, a wonderful casting director called Juliet Taylor, and another guy, Howard Feuer. I was kind of a favorite of theirs. So they would just call me up. I wouldn't audition. They'd say, well, Woody has a psychiatrist. It's 6 days. You want to do it? So I'd say, yeah, that's fun. I'd like to do that. But I didn't have this strong desire to be great at it. I just kind of, it was a sort of like a hobby of mine. I wanted to be good, but I was busy enough doing voiceovers, and I was the signature voice of USA Network. I was the signature voice of Mercedes-Benz. I was the signature voice of the Super Bowl. I was the signature. In those days, people had, there was such a thing as signature voices. CBS Sports, NBC News. I had all these big accounts. So I didn't do any real acting except for an occasional movie that would come along for a long time. And then the last really big account I had was CBS Sports, and I was the voice of the Olympics and the Super Bowl and all that stuff. And then a new regime came into CBS. This was about 2002, I guess, three, I don't remember, 2003 maybe. And they changed everything at CBS. They changed the graphics package, they changed the music, and they changed me. Now, at the time, there was this big kind of sea change in the voiceover world, and they didn't want people with deep, dramatic voices like mine, like James Earl Jonesy voices. They wanted real-sounding voices all of a sudden. And I haven't sounded like a real person since I'm about 8 or 9 years old. Right. So I was like, and I had been a visible enough player that I was all of a sudden kind of like part of that, those kind of people we don't want anymore. I was part of that old crew of guys. So my success, while I was grateful for it, kind of worked against me because I was part of the old guard. And by this time I had two kids and I was married and I had a house in Montauk and a house in New York and a lot of, you know, responsibilities and all that. And all of a sudden, you know, instead of making $700,000-$800,000 a year, I was making $12,000 a year, $6,000 a year. This went on for a few years. And, you know, we had some money saved, and but, you know, with kids and houses and all that, it gets used fast. And so I was, things got kind of dire, and I was sitting there. A friend of mine had said to me, look, you have enough money for like 1 year before you have to like sell your house and make some really serious changes. What would you like to do? And I said, well, if I didn't have to worry about it, I'd like to go back to acting and writing like I did when I started. But I mean, it's such a crapshoot, you know? And he said, well, why don't you try? So I did, to no huge success. Initially, I was on, you know, Law and Order SVU, like every other person who's ever done a demonstration of a food processor at Bloomingdale's, you know, has been on Law and Order.
But not as a dead body.
I was not a dead body. Too fat to be a dead body. Nobody could lift me. So I did that and, you know, little things like that. And then one day I was sitting there with my wife in Montauk and the phone rang. And she, my wife answered it and she said, do you know somebody called Joel Cohen? This is 2007.
One of the brothers.
Yes. So it was Joel Cohen. And I knew them a little bit because I had gone to drama school with Francis McDormand and John Turturro and a bunch of other people from, and I knew John Goodman, people, their, you know, retinue of people. And I had auditioned for Barton Fink, for the movie Barton Fink, although I didn't get the part, but they remembered me. So Joel Cohen said, listen, we're doing this movie. There's a part in it. I just have a feeling you'd be really good in this part. Are you interested? I was like, well, let me check my book. Yes, yes, yes. So I went to New York and I met with them and they said, well, we definitely want you to do it. We're not going to audition anybody. We definitely want you to do it. But the problem is we don't know when we're going to get to it. We're working on three movies simultaneously. One of them is that this movie, A Serious Man. We're also doing Burn After Reading, and I don't remember what the other movie was. They said, well, we have to do, Burn After Reading is kind of a star-studded movie. It has George Clooney and Brad Pitt, and we have to do it based on the availability of these people. So we didn't make A Serious Man, and a year passed. And I thought, oh, shit, this is one of those things that happens in show business, where it's a great part, it's a great script, and it's going to just fall apart, as frequently happens. So, then after like 16 months, they called and we made it. And then I had to wait another year for it to come out because it takes that long to post a movie. But when it finally did come out, it was nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars. I was shortlisted for an Oscar. I won an Independent Spirit Award for it. And all of a sudden, at the age of 52 or whatever I was, I suddenly had this second act of my career, something I never in a million years would have bet on.
Yeah.
So I was extremely lucky that it all came out that way. But I had a long period when I did nothing but voice acting.
Well, I'm glad you told that story because somebody else would really wanted to know where the voiceover came along. So we got to hear that too.
I'm not sure you're doing. Well, Fred, it has been fabulous having you back on the show. And those are fascinating stories to, you know, really, they really do tell people what this business is all about. We really appreciate you bringing your expertise and experience to us so people can know what to think about. So I really appreciate you coming on.
Are we at the end? I want to just say one more thing, if
please,
I can.
Go for it.
Please do.
Okay. So I was listening. I heard this great description about show business, to learn how show business works. It was from, the guy who played Doogie Howser.
Neil Patrick Harris.
So Neil Patrick Harris was being interviewed, and he said when he first got that job of playing Doogie Howser, Neil Botchko, who did that show, sat him and his parents down, took him out to lunch, and said, I want to explain to you how this business kind of works. He said, it's like surfing. You paddle out there, you wait for a wave. And then you don't catch a wave and you see these other people catch this wave and they ride it in and everybody says, yay, and it's great. And then you get a wave and you ride it in and it's fantastic and people are shouting and you love it and it's great. And then you're, of course, the wave ultimately crashes on the beach and then you have to paddle back out again and wait for a wave again. And maybe you get one and maybe it takes long and maybe it doesn't. And That's the way show business works.
Yeah.
So for everybody. So, you know, the message is, if you have faith in yourself, which you must have in this business, don't give up hope. And also, don't think that the good times last forever. Be prepared for everything, because that's all part of it.
Absolutely. Well, Fred, thanks so much for being here. It's great to see you again.
And you too.
Eventually we'll all get together in person one of these days. So anyway, thanks for being here. We really appreciate it.
Great to see you.
Alrighty. All right. We'll be right back to wrap things up right after this.
Hi, this is Bill Farmer, and you are watching Voice Over Body Shop. It's great.
In these modern times, every business needs a website. When you need a website for your voice acting business, there's only one place to go. Like the name says, voiceactorwebsites.com. Their experience in this niche webmaster market gives them the ability to quickly and easily get you from concept to live online in a much shorter time. When you contact voiceactorwebsites.com, their team of experts and designers really get to know you and what your needs are. They work with you to highlight what you do. Then they create an easily navigable website for your potential clients to get the big picture of who you are and how your voice is the one for them. Plus, voiceactorwebsites.com has other great resources, like their practice script library and other resources to help your voiceover career flourish. Don't try it yourself. Go with the pros. VoiceActorWebsites.com, where your VO website shouldn't be a pain in the you-know-what.
Well, it's time to talk about Source Elements again, the creators of Source Connect. Version, what are we on? 3.91 Source Connect Standard, the version that you should be using today and you've probably been using for at least 5 years now. That's how good this program is. It's been around that long, or longer, actually. It's originally came out in its original form over 15 years ago. It is the tool that's being used now to produce the biggest budget commercial promo trailer and a lot of other projects as well, remotely. And that's because it allows your voice to end up directly in the production. It inserts it straight into the track of that Pro Tool session or whatever system they're using at the other end, so that it improves their workflow. It's a tool that makes productions flow. They're efficient. And when set up correctly, it even allows an engineer to record multiple voice actors all to their own tracks. And then when the session's over, the producer goes right to mixing. It's incredibly efficient. It works great. The sound quality is top notch. And you really should have it. So get yourself set up. Get the demo at the very least, so you have an idea of the process of setting it up. There are quite a few steps. If you really need a handhold, go to georgethe.tech/SC and check out my guidance on Source Connect. But get it up and running and make sure you have it in your arsenal, because it's going to allow you to take some of those bigger gigs. And you want to be able to say, I've got it, when the agent comes along saying you need it. Anyway, this is a great, great product, and we really thank Source Elements for their support year after year. Okay, we'll be right back to wrap it up.
This is Ariana Ratner, and you're listening to VoiceOver Body Shop, VOBS.TV.
And we are back to say goodbye. We're going to wrap it up and then re-rack it for Tech Talk, so stay tuned for that if you're watching live right now. Next week, we'll have Tech Talk, number 51, by the way. And then the following week, March 1st, Mary Lynn Wissner will be here.
Hey. Great.
I mean, coach, she knows the business inside out, backwards and upside down.
Great.
We've been wanting to get her back on for a while. Not a lot of names on the donor list this week, but, you know, last week we had like 10,000. So who do we got this week?
Yeah, these names are all familiar. We've got Christopher Epperson, Christy Burns, and my old friend Graham Spicer. So those are names we read all the time because they are subscribers. They probably opted to send in a little bit of money every month, which you can do, or you can just make a one-time donation if you got some huge gold nugget from one of our guests or from Dan and I. It's up to you how you might want to support the show, but we really appreciate it.
Yeah, if they didn't get a gold nugget from Fred tonight, then they weren't listening.
They weren't listening.
Some great stuff in there. We need to thank our sponsors, of course, Harlan Hogan's VoiceOver Essentials.
VoiceOver Extra.
Source Elements.
VOHeroes.com.
VoiceActorWebsites.com. And
JMC Demos.
Alrighty. Also, Jeff Holman for dragging all those questions out of the chat room. Really appreciate it. Of course, our amazing technical director who pulls it off once again while not even being here, Sue Merlino, thanks to her, and of course, Lee Penny for being Lee Penny, and he knows who he is. Anyway, we're going to re-rack it here, and so stay tuned for Tech Talk. And remember, you know, when it comes to your home voiceover studio, if it sounds good,
it is good.
I'm Dan Leonard.
I'm George Whittam.
And this is VoiceOver
Body Shop
or VO.
B.S.